I'm not a gambler. I like to do a bit of gambling, but I'm not a gambler.
The following programme, entitled From Flutter to Gutter, was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee. From Flutter to Gutter is a programme about gambling and gambling addiction. This is 103.2 Dublin City FM. My name is Ger Cunahan. Mary is a retired lady who goes to a local amusement parlour some 3 times a week to play slot machines. She does so to pass the time, to spend a few hours out of the house in the company of others. Win, lose or draw, she's happy as she doesn't lose or make much money.
Now the definition of gambling is, one of the definitions is, the wagering of money or something of material value on an event with an uncertain outcome, with the primary intent of winning additional money and or material goods. Now, Mary, would you like to be defined as a gambler? You're a gambler.
I'm not a gambler. I like to do a bit of gambling, but I'm not a gambler. I know when to stop. I don't sell and I don't borrow to go and gamble. If I've got the money, I'll go and have a little gamble. Apart from that, if I haven't, then I'll stay out.
Gambling may strike us as a relatively harmless activity, the flutter many of us have when the Grand National comes around, the scratch card and the few bob on the lotto. Greyhound races and horse racing spring to mind as well. A bit of fun, no harm done, and by and large, this is probably true. In addition, the Irish Times of April the 18th, 2013, reveals that in the past 25 years, the Irish Lottery Company has made more than €12 billion in sales. €6 billion of this was allocated to prizes and €4 billion to social causes. So it all sounds like a fairly good news story, but there are people who disagree. Some would say that gambling is inherently bad news. Full stop. This programme is, among other things, the story of recovering compulsive gambler John, who explains somewhat paradoxically his contempt for money, which does not fit nicely with the image we have of a money-hungry addict. In fact, John compares himself to a drug addict. He will narrate his battle with the illness. The programme will also look at the concept of gambling, the stages of addiction, the statistics of gambling, responsible gambling, addiction awareness, gambling awareness, policy on same. So, let's go back to Mary, who we've introduced as a retired lady who likes to play the slot machines some 3 times a week.
What would your main activity be?
A slot machine, about €20 a time.
How long would that last you?
All depends. If you win, it could last you a couple of hours. If you don't win, then it could go within an hour. But I go for the company as well.
Can you just give me an example of how it's a social event or a social activity? Just a small example.
Well, I go for the company because now I've retired. I've got too much time on my hands. So I go for company as well as a bit of pleasure. But sometimes I like to have a little chat as well. But more often than not, you play your machine and you don't talk. That's how I like it.
When I was a kid, I'd let the guy roll in his pennies into a big bubbly machine and the pennies would all pile up and then he'd lose and then I'd jump in. Don't tell me adults do the same.
Yes, they do. They do. They sit there and watch you and if they find out you're not winning, when you're gone, they get on there and they play and they try to win. And some of them do.
But you wouldn't do that.
I haven't done, no, because I'm one of the first there and I'm always out before most of them are in there.
Will there be people there all day?
Oh, yes. Yes, I know one person that goes in there from 10 o'clock in the morning and if her machine's not paid out for her, she'd be there at 1 o'clock at night. I'm not like that.
Can you imagine if, for a moment, that person who does spend 12 hours there, can you imagine why they might do that? So many hours. Can you imagine why?
Myself, I think it was because they were chasing the game, chasing the money they've put in where the machine's not paid out and it goes up and up to certain money before it does pay out. Well, then they chase that, make sure that nobody else goes on their machine. My bird, the world.
when we think of gambling, one of the first thoughts to enter our minds must surely be money. Surely gambling is about money. At least that is what I thought before I met former compulsive gambler, John.
Well, from my own particular perspective as a recovering compulsive gambler, money terrifies me. It absolutely scares the hell out of me. Because when you're younger, all you can think of is money. You want money, you need money. As a compulsive gambler, all of a sudden, you want more money. And then you need money. And then money is irrelevant to you because you can never get enough of it. So I'd have the gambler's contempt for money. At the same time, you also have the what they call the dream world of the compulsive gambler who wants money to do great things for everybody. But the paradox is that no matter how much money you have, it's never enough.
Sensation, temptation, always gotta have some more. You love that sticky stuff in a way that go.
Certainly from a compulsive point of view, it's the idea of money more than it is ever the money. Because when we get it, and we have had large wins, I mean, I can tell you I've won several big wins. That money is just burning a hole in my pocket and I can't wait to get rid of it. So it's not a love of money, it's a love, I think, of more what money represents. But because of the disease, the bad wiring in the head, we just don't see it the same way as everyone else does.
What happens when a gambler goes to town to pay a bill?
It gets to the stage where a compulsive gambler would say that they would go into town, say, with €500, looking to pay a bill for €400. They'd say, well, I can gamble 100 and maybe build that up to 400 and I'd still have all the money. But of course, the logic is, flies out the window in the face of the disease, and what happens is you end up spending the entire thing. So you end up with no money, owing money, and then still having a bill to pay, which means that to get that, you need to borrow more money to gamble again to try and win that money back. And it's just a never-ending spiral.
I never get enough. I know I'm never, I know I'm never, I know I'm never satisfied. Oh, so I'm never, oh no, I'm never.
You mentioned the word disease. That sounds a bit harsh on yourself, or harsh?
No, I mean, it is a disease. I mean, it's not seen as the same way as a drinker or somebody who's in drugs, because there's only so much you can drink before you fall over. There's only so much drugs you can take. But I can gamble all day, all night. I can gamble away my house, your house, and every bit of possession that I have, and you could still go, and there's no outward physical signs. But inwardly, the struggle is just as hard as anybody who has a problem, and I'd include myself in that phrase, because I've said to people before, if you put £1,000 in a room and you put a heroin addict in it and you put me in it, that money will be gone, but it may not necessarily be the heroin addict, but everyone will blame him first, but it could be me.
Is everybody a potential gambler?
No, in the same way as not everybody's a potential alcoholic. I mean, people say to me, you must absolutely hate gambling and you can't be around people who gamble. What I'd say is I shouldn't be around people who gamble, but if friends of mine want to have a bet, I can't turn around and say don't, because in the same way, if I want to have a drink and one of them's a recovering alcoholic, they're not going to turn around and say to me, oh, you can't do that, it's evil. It's kind of a live and let live. The only person's addiction that you're managing is your own, and that's the only way to do it.
Have you ever been penniless?
Oh, yeah. Penniless is a circumstance I'm aspiring towards at the moment. I owe so much. It's a case of, you know, work, as Groucho Marx once said, work your way up from extreme poverty to nothing. But I think, you know, most compulsives will tell you that it is, you know, it is the case of getting to the point where you don't think about money, where you don't really care about money, where you don't have it. That's why in an awful lot of cases now, certainly in a recession, the one industry that's doing well is the gambling industry. If you know what I mean, it's an investment that pays a yield, that gives you something that technically speaking you're not entitled to. And, you know, money earned 10 times better, or money won, I should say, is 10 times better than money earned. I mean, one of my favourite stories to tell people was one day I went in to a particular gambling establishment, which I won't name. I put a bet on, and within 10 minutes, I'd won over a grand. Now, a normal person would be delighted with that and would leave. I was absolutely disgusted because I got no thrill out of that. I needed to, like most compulsive gamblers, to lose and be at my wit's end, and the adrenaline is pumping. And at that stage, you get the win, and it's the best payoff that you've ever had. It's better than sex, no matter what happens. You just live for that moment. And what happens is, once you've done that once, you think, I want to do that again. You become hooked on the feeling of losing and then the big win. But unfortunately for a lot of gamblers, the length of time it takes for them to get the big win, they've run out of money. So they start borrowing, and the big win never comes. And you're chasing that one adrenaline fix that's just not going to happen. And when it does happen, you want it again. So you keep going, and it's an absolutely nasty spiral.
People have, I suppose, some real intense priorities for life. Love, friendship, roof over the head maybe. Where does gambling and friendship come in your priorities?
Well, when you're in the throes of the addiction, your friends are walking wallets. And that's all they are. You see them and you think to yourself, oh my God, I need to get money off this person. I need to avoid this person because I owe them money. And as it goes, your friends will always be your friends. And they'll see you through times, but there will come a time when, for their own sake, they'll just have to go, look, you know, I'm letting you go, I'm cutting you loose. Do what you got to do because we can't handle this anymore. And it's only then that you make the choice. I mean, there's the famous rock bottom. And for me, rock bottom was nearly losing all my friends, every single one of them, or not being able to face them, or having the reaction when they saw me, oh God, here he comes again, he's going to tap me up for more money. You really, really don't want to hurt anyone. But your addiction is your master, and your addiction tells you you need money.
On the outside, Moscow Flyer putting in a determined bid from the back. Hoy Cloy is finishing strongly. Central House, Foot Island in third, Moscow Flyer. Hoy Cloy the far side. They're running up towards the finish, and he's mistaken the winning post. He's mistaken the winning post completely, Roger Loughran. And Hoy Cloy has come through to win it. What a disaster.
Roy Brindley is one of those people who believes that life's a gamble. In fact, he's written a book called Life's a Gamble, with a subtitle of The High Stakes and Low Life of a Poker Professional. Roy Brindley is a poker professional. He also gambles online. Before his poker career, Roy Brindley was involved in greyhound racing and worked in a kennels near Dorking at the age of 17. I contacted Roy and asked him about his early life. Roy, there's an awful lot. You've done everything. You were an only child. You went into dogs. You spoke about adrenaline rushes, about school, about going to college, about going to a casino, getting barred from a casino. Roy, what's it like to be an only child?
You know, it's not much fun. I've got to say, I've just started my own family and you know, I almost insisted that we had at least two. Only child, lonely child, it really does. It sets you apart. You are different. And my upbringing was difficult because my parents tried to do the very best for me. They sent me to a private school, but I lived on a council estate. So I didn't fit in at home, back on the council estate. I certainly didn't fit in. And when I went to school, I didn't fit in there either. So compounded to really having no brothers, no sisters, no one to play with, relate to, and grow up alongside. You know, childhood wasn't the happiest of experiences for me, to be honest. I don't think I stopped growing up, actually, till I was about 30.
Now, can I say from looking at your book that you got your habit of going into bookies and betting on horses and dogs, you got that from the family, or was it genetic?
Well, Granddad was a compulsive gambler through and through, totally compulsive. Every penny he ever had went, you know, it didn't matter what he could win. You know, there's never a point he would stop. And he really did put my grandmother through absolute hell. And my father was of the same ilk. So, you know, I didn't have much chance in mitigation. You know, the first recollection I have is placing a bet as a six-year-old, which won. And then as a seven-year-old, watching Red Run win the Grand National with my pocket money on again. And suddenly gambling was the greatest thing ever. I was never going to stop winning. And compounded to Granddad reading me race form update rather than bedtime stories aged 8, 9 and 10, it was in my blood.
Grace Sombrero was very near, he's gone. Grace Sombrero was gone, a dead one. Grace Sombrero faller, Glenn Kiln's a faller, Proud Percy's a faller, a dead one also. And as they jump the water, Crisp is a long way clear of Endless Folly. And Endless Folly jumps in second, then comes Red Rum. Behind Red Rum is Rouge Autumn, then Sunny Lad. Can Harris is a faller, then comes...
It's not just about the money.
No, you know, a lot of gamblers, when they do have a big win, they go and treat the family and do good. They don't actually realise that they've put the family through 6 months or a year of misery and hardship, no food on the table, trying to chase this win. You also, you gamble within your means, no matter what those means are. I mean, I can recall working for 50 quid a week, 45 of that went down the betting shop. Likewise, subsequent years, things have been good. But no matter what I've earned, You know, I've had to put that on the line and actually a few quid more, you know. When you've got the gambling sickness, you've got to gamble within your means and just beyond it. When you're a sociable gambler, 10 a year on the Grand National, 20 quid on the horses of the weekend, whatever, that's very different. You know, you've not got the bug. It's like enjoying alcohol. Most people do. Some people develop a problem, you know, but very few and far between. But I certainly had a problem.
I'm feeling lucky here, baby, feeling lucky. There it is, Iceman. Oh. More free ones will be.
Is there a skill involved in poker playing?
Yeah, most definitely. A lot depends on what variety of poker you play, the Texas Hold'em. But the thing is that game, anyone can play it. It's a very simplistic game. It is skillful, but it's not as skillful as some other forms of poker. Omaha, games of that kind of nature. You'll see the same players come as before over and over and over again. But the reason Texas Hold'em's so popular is anyone can play it. Whereas everybody saw snooker on television, everybody thought, wow, that looks easy. They all rushed out, bought a cue, joined a club, couldn't play. You know, on any given day, someone can win a Texas Hold'em competition.
Is there any bravery involved in playing poker?
Oh, a huge amount, huge amount. And when I watch a lot of TV shows on telly at the moment, it actually reminds me, how most people haven't got a clue, certainly people haven't got bravery. You know, in a poker tournament, you get to the final stages and you are playing for hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions. And, you know, you may have a pair of queens and you say raise, and the guy next to you says, I'm all in. If he's got the hand he's represented, if he's got kings or aces, this could cost you 300,000 or 400,000. Now, you need to be brave. He could be bluffing. And again, you need to be brave to make that bluff. That's the bottom line. You actually need to forget about the fact you're playing for money, tell yourself you're playing for the glory. After you've won it, then you can enjoy the money. But with so much money on the line these days in poker, you know, the winner could be playing for a million. You've got to be brave in these spots because this is life-changing stuff.
If I say to you, hey Roy, what do you work at?
Yeah, by definition I'm a professional poker player, but I'm a bit of a John Virgo, to be honest. I don't play as much poker as I used to. I enjoy doing commentary and corporate entertainment, writing books, writing columns for newspapers, anything and everything around poker. Got myself a nice little niche there now, and thankfully through poker, ironically, I've stopped gambling.
Let's take a little break now from the more serious side of a flutter, and let's look at what could be called social gambling, although many would quibble with the word gamble in this particular context.
And the Lewis line is number 9, 7 and 6. Prawley Snickers, 76. And the mother-in-law, 6 and 1, 61.
To this end, I'm going to talk to a group of ladies who play bingo in Whitefriar Street Church and see what they think about bingo and how addictive or dangerous bingo might be for them.
Yeah, well, bingo is very helpful, and it's very good for all the elderly people that's around, and you have prizes, you have a line, you have a full house, and you can have a laugh, a chat, and what else do I say? And everyone is very sociable.
Yeah, friendly. Now,
friendly, and the men and the women that run it are the same, very nice and very sociable.
Two stout ladies, all the 8s, 88.
Oh, there's no balls.
No, there's no balls in the modern one. In the modern one, no. It's numbers that come up. And it's very exciting. It's very exciting, though.
Now, you're not telling me a bit of bingo is exciting.
Well, it is exciting because you're waiting for a number. You're waiting for your full out there. I remember myself.
You just said to your neighbours, I'm waiting on two.
And I'm waiting on one number. And you could be ages waiting and they never come up. And it's like hurling and football.
The two little ducks, all the 2s, 22.
So there's a little bit of not just social way you're talking, but kind of like a team spirit.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, team spirit is both in other words. Yeah.
Solidarity.
We're getting excited.
Yeah, hold on. But yous aren't playing against each other, are yous? Or are yous?
No, we're not playing against each other, no.
It's nothing to do with the balls, because that's called coming out. No one knows what's coming out.
I know, but still, if you win and I don't win, do I not get annoyed because you won?
No. They don't. If your neighbour... No, that's the one.
No, well, you're right. Why would you get annoyed? Because, like, I mean, you can't win. As some people said to me, "Or you win the next game." I said, "Hold on a minute. I can't win the next game until all my numbers come up."
One of the ladies there compared the excitement of a game of bingo with the excitement of a game of hurling or football. That seems to sum up the dangers associated with bingo. Now, of course, there are more professional bingo outlets around, but in general, I think you can get from the tone of their contribution that it's mainly a social event for these ladies, especially when you compare their tone with the tones of John and poker professional Roy Brindley. If there is a spectrum of fun betting or fun gambling, we may say that bingo is at the beginning of the spectrum, and as we go along the spectrum of betting and fun gambling, etc., we have another institution in Ireland, which is the National Lottery. I went along to speak to Paula McAvoy, the PR of the National Lottery, and my main area of inquiry centred around the history of the National Lottery and the money it spends on good causes. In 1987, we would have just had one lottery a week. And now, I suppose, to keep up with the times, there has been an explosion of products.
Yeah, certainly the product range started in 1987 with one product, which was scratch cards, and moved into 1988 with Lotto that year. And then from that grew Lotto Plus, Daily Million, all the games that we know and love now. So certainly, yeah, the Irish public definitely took, you know, lottery to its heart. And I think people have seen the value of the games. I think it's for the good of the community, and I think people understand that, you know, on other products, for example, in the gaming sector, you pay your money, you win or lose, but no money goes back into the community. With the National Lottery, from everything that you spend on National Lottery products, say, for example, it's €5 a week, 30% of that goes back to fund good causes. And that could be a GAA pitch in your own area. It could be an arts project through dance or music. It could be an Irish language project, or it could be a health or welfare project. And all of these receive funding throughout the year. Obviously, it's the choice of government where that funding goes, not the National Lottery Company. We make the products and market them. But on the back of all of that, because the public are generous in their support of those products, huge amounts of money, over $4.2 billion, has now gone back into Irish cultural life.
Over $4.2 billion since 1987. And there are other spin-off activities associated with the National Lottery.
In terms of, say, our agent network, the National Lottery sells its product through a range of independent retailers. They're not National Lottery retailers, but they do work for the lottery in that they have a license to sell National Lottery products. And obviously there's about 3,740 of those get around. Licenses change hands from time to time. But a lot of these agents obviously employ other people. And when it comes to a big jackpot, if you go into a lotto agent, you'll see the queues that are there. So obviously there's a generation of employment in the community through the sale of lottery products as well. And obviously there's good spin-off with the retail network in terms of the sale of other products in their stores as well. So I think in that sense, the lottery, the National Lottery in Ireland, is really part and parcel of the Irish community. The games are fun, they're entertaining. People like to play, they like to play in large numbers. About 65% of the population now over 18 play lottery products regularly. So that's, I suppose, a sign that people really do like to play, and they see it as something that, you know, families and friends can play as well. And then obviously there's the jobs aspect, and obviously then the money that goes back to fund good causes. So I suppose we have a slogan, which is everyone's a winner, but in this sense it's true. You may not win a jackpot prize, you may not win a small prize, but even if you don't, you've contributed to the greater good of the wider community by contributing to good causes. Players shared winnings of $406.4 million, which was 55% prize payout level. And 64% of all adults now play National Lottery games on a regular basis. But obviously we're very conscious of social, responsible gaming. So only over 18s can play National Lottery products. And that's, you know, I suppose policed, to use that word, very vigilantly in agents' shops. For example, agents would never sell to an under 18 player or anyone who would seem to be under 18. And there's a lot on our website at www.lottery.ie on corporate and responsible, or social responsibility, and in the gaming sector as well. So for anybody who's interested in that area, I'd advise just have a look onto the Play Responsibly section there.
Any millionaires?
When we look at number of new millionaires, for example, in 2012, 23 new lotto millionaires were created. And now people can play online as well, which makes it a lot easier and a lot more convenient, for example, than in the rainy weather, whether it's summer or winter in Ireland, saying, you know, at 7 o'clock, I'd love to play lotto, but I don't want to go out in the rain. Now you can play through your mobile phone app or online. And that's all the main games and also some instant win games, which are like scratch cards in the play online environment.
I wanna be on the cover of Forbes magazine, smiling next to Oprah and the Queen.
Gamble Pie is a voluntary non-profit NGO whose remit is to inform the community that gambling can harm. Its primary goal is to prevent gambling addiction through information and education in the community. Tim Coffey is the voluntary manager of Gamble Pie.
International experts say that at least 7% of a Western country's population are actually addicted to gambling, as classified under the World Health Organization F63. However, it has to be remembered and also thought about that, in fact, when you pick up a cigarette or a drink or a drug, that there is an actual effect to doing it, to consuming it. And you don't have to be an addict to be damaged by gambling. And what I mean by that is that, unfortunately, when a person takes up cigarette smoking or alcohol, you always start off with the minimum. And that's how it is with gambling as well. The evidence that is coming out now from international sources is that anyone at any time of life, from any background, can begin to become harmed by gambling. And at first, of course, people see it as money. But then there's the social kick in of what happens to a person. They start withdrawing socially, perhaps even from their job, and the effects start to kick in slowly but surely.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns of staring out the window at the darkness till boredom overtook us. And he began to speak. He said, "Son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces."
What is happening lately in the last 2 years because of brain imaging? The studies are beginning to show that there's actually physical damage within a person, for example, in their cognitive thinking. And really, it's like your brain being worn out by constantly repeating an action, and this action would be gambling. And of course, with the likes of the internet, you can gamble 24/7, you know? And so, of course, you're repeating that over and over. For example, to give you a comparison, a person in a job working in a factory, they wouldn't be allowed to work more than 8 or 9 hours on a machine under health and safety. Yet there's nothing to warn or inform a person, "Oh, well, hold on a minute, you're going beyond a certain threshold."
So if you don't mind my saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I give you some advice.
I perhaps innocently mentioned to Tim Coffey from Gamble Pie that under 18s and young people in general weren't allowed to gamble, weren't allowed legally to gamble. So I insisted, surely there cannot be a problem of gambling addiction among young people.
A lady told me once that whilst on a holiday, her son was at home and he managed to get hold of 2 credit cards. And of course, he gambled and so forth, you know. And what she was surprised about was not only at his ingenuity, but she said it herself, he didn't drink, he didn't take drugs to her knowledge. And because he was in the bedroom, I thought he was safe. And I think that's a message that has to be taken on board by parents now, unfortunately. Is your child safe in regard to being online? Now, we already know, of course, about sexual predators and these type of people. But it has to be remembered that there's safeguards in place, all right. But enforcing them and having an independent body I believe would make a big, big difference.
So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bombed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, if you're gonna play the game.
Some highly insightful comments on gambling from Tim Coffey, the voluntary manager of Gamble Pie. Now, in order to further explore the area of gambling addiction, I went to visit Austin Pryor.
I'm the deputy director here in Rutland Centre. I also head up a department we call Continuing Care, which is the part of the programme that looks after people when they complete the residential programme and they go back out into the big bad world.
In general, what is the work of the Rutland Centre, please?
We call ourselves a rehabilitation centre, so we try to provide rehabilitation to people who are looking for recovery from addiction, whether it be addiction to a substance such as alcohol or drugs, or whether it's addiction to a behaviour like gambling addiction, sex addiction, work addiction, or an issue around food, eating disorders. So we operate, we have a 5-week residential programme. We also do a 10-week outpatient programme where people come really to work on the issues underlying their addictive behaviour, and we try to teach them different ways of coping. I suppose that kind of sums up. We try to teach people a different way of coping. We try to get them to take responsibility for their actions, for their behaviours, and to change their ways of thinking around it.
Right. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count.
Chasing the loss. I would imagine that somebody who's addicted to gambling would be chasing the win. Sounds logical to me. Yep. Success means win. Success to me does not mean getting an adrenaline buzz from almost losing.
That's the thing, I think. The gambling is all about the buzz. So it's not about the win or lose. It's about the buzz. Gambling takes on two distinct forms. There's what they call the action gamblers, which are the guys and the girls who bet on, say, football matches, the outcomes, like the first score, the first person going to be sent off, all this stuff. So there's always action, and that presupposes the adrenaline, will I, won't I, you know, and that's where the buzz is for them. The other type of gamblers are what I would call the zone-out gamblers, which are the fellows who sit in front of slot machines, you know, and there is no buzz for them. What's for them is this fact that they've zoned out. And they're not thinking of anything, only the machine that's in front of them. But the common thing that both of them have in common is that they're mood altering. For one is they're helping themselves feel high, feel good. For the other guys, it's helping themselves to not to face whatever they have to face.
Once again, I assumed that if you sat in front of a slot machine with an empty bucket, you 100% were focused on getting that bucket full. So it's not.
No, it's really, but just like, again, make the distinction between somebody who's just got into the, you know, the slot machines in Bray, and they bring a euro with them, they break it into 10p pieces and they throw it in. And when the euro is gone, they laugh and they walk away. The compulsive gambler can't do that. The compulsive gambler feels like he's giving his money on loan. So therefore, whether it be a casino or a slot machine or whatever it is, you know, they're only borrowing his money, he's going to get it back. So the euro that he spends is gone, but then he goes and gets an euro in order to win that euro back. And that we refer to that as chasing. So when somebody gets caught up in the chasing, now the fun goes out of it very quickly, because now it's about trying to get back what I shouldn't have lost in the first place. You know, and if you apply the same thing, like people, anybody who knows anything about, say, stocks and shares, will always say to you, only put into it what you know you can afford to lose. Compulsive gamblers don't think like that. They put into it whatever they have available.
You're listening to From Flutter to Gutter, a programme about gambling and gambling addiction. This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee. You're listening to 103.2 Dublin City FM. I now attempt to put on my amateur psychologist hat and hazard a guess at the reasons why a person becomes a gambler or a compulsive gambler.
The reason somebody is a compulsive gambler or a regular gambler is because they've psychological issues.
Well, I would say emotional issues rather than psychological issues, and most of them do have, you know, and gamblers do have that in common. They find it very, very difficult to deal with any kind of emotion. You know, they most of them cut off from the neck up, so everything happens in their head. Again, it's all part. If you think about the whole process of gambling, it's very much a heady intellectual activity. They don't do emotions, you know, so a lot of it is to do with emotional instability, or what would you call it, an emotional disorder of some sort, you know. Like, I remember somebody saying once that if you sat down to design an activity which would cause somebody to go back time and time again, gambling is that activity, in that it's easily available. Walk down the street, it's available on your computer, it's available at all times. But also it's, you know, what they call this positive, intermittent positive reinforcement. So, and they've proven even this, I think, with rats in the laboratory. It's not the winning every time that causes the brain to trigger off. It's the fact that you win sometimes. So if you, you know, if somebody starts off gambling and they never win, they will probably get tired of it earlier on before. But most gamblers will tell you they got hooked in very early on by a big win. So they're forever chasing that big win. It's like the heroin addict whose first big high, they spend the rest of their lives trying to chase that big high. So the gambler does the same, you know, and the big win is the thing. But then when they get that big win, that money they have is probably going to be spent on the next one, because if I won the next one, I'd be able to clear everything and I'd also have a bit over, you know. So there's no logic to it.
Well, we've heard from bingo players, from slot machine players, from John, the compulsive gambling addict, from Austin Pryor, and now we're going to hear from someone who essentially represents the gambling industry. Here's Carmel Fitzpatrick talking to Brian Barry.
Brian Barry is operations manager for Gamble Aware. Gamble Aware is Ireland's national organisation devoted to increasing awareness, improving education and funding treatment for problem gambling. Now, who are you, please, and what is your remit?
Well, we say you hit the nail on the head there with your intro. I mean, our main raison d'etre is basically raising awareness of the issue of problem gambling, improving education, or making sure that the people who have a gambling problem can get the treatment that they need.
How do you go about this?
Well, at the moment, it's mainly universities. I mean, I have contacted some schools, but they're maybe less inclined to have us involved than third-level institutions would be, where we're kind of dealing with adults rather than children, you know what I mean? But, I mean, we've been received very well by third-level educational establishments. We had quite a large awareness campaign in UL this year. Oh, well, it was this university year. It was last November. So that was a one-week campaign where there was students involved and they were handing out leaflets, letting people know about the dangers of problem gambling. And we'd say they had a Facebook page and they were on local radio in Limerick and all that kind of thing. So it was, you know, it raised quite a lot of awareness, basically.
And how do you deal with the problem when it arises?
Well, we say we don't deal with it. We say personally here, Coonver would be the people who would deal with the actual problem gamblers when they come to us. So we say people would contact our website, or people would ring the National Problem Gambling Helpline that we'd run, and they would be put through to Coonver. Do you know who Coonver are? They would say they would be the largest organisation in Ireland dealing with the addiction issues.
So what are the warning signs? I mean, is someone obviously playing bingo not a warning sign, buying a lottery ticket or popping into a slot machine parlour? These seem innocent enough. Can they lead into bigger, more dangerous things?
It would be the person more than the product would be the problem, you know what I mean?
Right.
As in, certain people would be have a propensity maybe to kind of become compulsive about things, or we say would have maybe an addictive type personality. The vast majority of people, 95% of people, can gamble away every week or whatever, have a bet on a match or, you know, a golf tournament or whatever they want, a horse race, and, you know, win or lose, they don't think too deeply about it, and they carry on with life as normal. But there are a significant minority of gamblers who can't control the impulse to gamble, as in, whether they win or lose, they still want to gamble more. You know, if they're losing, they want to make all their money back. If they're winning, they want to increase their stakes so they win more, you know, etc. So it's the person, really, rather than the product.
What would be the warning signs?
Well, betting every day certainly wouldn't be a good sign, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't be a good sign. But we'd say we say the compulsive, you know, part of it would be betting on everything. You know what I mean? Yes. As in, someone can go into a betting shop every day and have one bet on five teams in the Premier League or whatever to win. Whereas betting compulsively would be they go into the betting shop and they'd have 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 bets, and they'd bet on everything that comes up. You know, they'd bet on every horse race, every greyhound race, everything else basically to take about everything that comes up on the screen. In other words, they would want to bet on it, even though they've no knowledge or understanding of it, you know, whatsoever, or no interest really. All they want to do is bet. Again, the compulsive nature, if they're chasing losses, you know what I mean? If they're losing money, they want to keep betting to get their money back.
Right.
And likewise, if they're winning, they want to keep betting to make more money, you know, and of course that will end up turning into losing as well, of course.
Absolutely. Now, do you deal in any way with the fallout from gambling addiction, or is that Coonweir as well?
Well, it's Coonweir basically. I mean, we say I deal with the fallout insofar as I'd be in daily contact with problem gamblers, and they would be emailing our website, they would be ringing the number, and they would start maybe with me, and I would put them through to Coonweir. So I would hear stories. I mean, I deal with it from that side, but I don't try and help them personally. I don't get involved in the psychological side of it or any kind of counselling part.
Does the government have a policy on gambling?
Well, not really. I mean, we say there's a gambling bill due to be brought in, and that hopefully will lead to everything that we say that all the other kind of European nations would have, which would be, you know, a policy about responsible gambling. Now, obviously, the government is in favour of responsible gambling, but they don't enforce any laws to ensure that it happens. You know what I mean? They don't, we say, fund any organisations like ourselves who are trying to promote responsible gambling. So, you know, they're kind of vaguely in favour of it, but they don't do anything in practice, really, to aid it.
How are you funded?
We're funded by the industry, basically, which is tough going, yeah. I can tell you, because we say the Indigenous Irish gambling operators have very little interest in funding us or any organisation because they don't have to, you know what I mean? They don't have to pay a penny for responsible gambling, really, if they don't want to. So, I mean, we're basically trying to aim at their kind of their better nature, rather, you know what I mean? There's nothing to force them to do anything, so we have to depend on them wanting to do it themselves, and a lot of them don't want to do it.
Before I let you go, what exactly is your job as operations manager?
I basically would be at the centre of it, as in I would be dealing with Coonweir, making sure that they're paid for what they do for us,
and
just getting feedback from them on how we can improve our service. I would be updating the website. I would be organising these campaigns with the universities. Basically, anything we do goes through me, but I don't do everything myself. But I would be kind of, I suppose, the administration side of the organisation.
Brian Lynch, who are you and what is your current project?
Brian, I'm an addiction counsellor, the IAAAC. I have offices in Ockram, County Wicklow and in Arklow. At present, I am completing my MSc, my Master's in Trinity College, under the heading, although it's drug and alcohol policies, I went through the powers that be and wanted to do my thesis on internet gambling, online gambling, and the problems that gambling have for individuals in Ireland. Admittedly, gambling is a pastime for a huge majority of people, but for a quickly increasing minority, it's really, really becoming problematic. The question that's asked usually at an interview is, what is problem gambling? And this explanation encapsulates exactly what it is and how it affects the person. An addictive process in which the subject is driven by an overwhelming, uncontrollable impulse to gamble. The impulse progresses in intensity and urgency, consuming more and more of the individual's time, energy, and emotional and material resources. Ultimately, it invades, undermines, and often destroys everything that is meaningful in his life. And I think that explanation encapsulates the way problem gambling affects the individual, just the individual, and obviously family members then after that, which we'll speak about later.
In my day, I say to Brian, gambling did go on, but it seemed to go on a 9-to-5 basis, with horse racing on Saturday and the bookies full. But that was it. How have things changed?
What's happening is the prevalence, the ways to gamble are just, you know, 24/7 now, with internet, with the bookie. I mean, at one stage, it used to be, you know, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, Saturday, but then the bookies closed at 5 o'clock. It was gone. That's it. You couldn't gamble anymore. Maybe you might go out to the dogs. But look, basically, more or less, you couldn't gamble, you know, anymore. And that was it. You know, that's restraint theory. That we're allowed, you know, you do what you're allowed to do, because then societal sort of situations won't allow you. Like, if people haven't got a bookies in their village, and then they have to go through ringing and trying to go, you know, from years ago, they didn't gamble that much, and that'll show you. But availability to gamble has a huge impact on gambling problems. So with the internet and stuff like that, and as I say, with then it went in just to horse racing, just to use as an example, it went to evening racing, Sunday racing, it went to absolutely everything. So it's nearly across the board. I mean, during the summertime, I mean, if you're driving around at 9:30, you'll still see the lights on the book. There's people, individuals in there gambling till that hour. And then Sundays used to be sacrosanct in Ireland, but of course now there's gambling every Sunday, do you know. So the opportunities to gamble.
Brian now brings in the concept of a digital divide.
There's no getting away from the fact that gambling used to be the area for middle-aged men, you know, on a Saturday, and the bookies will be packed and stuff like that. They'll have their bet and that's it. And that's what gambling was. But now there's a thing called the digital divide. They talk about the digital divide. So people that are used to using online and stuff like that say, right, okay, this online gambling, I'm fairly adept at using the internet. What the problem is gambling is always a chance of luck. So being adept at using the internet doesn't travel into the arena of gambling. But that's where the gap is. And that's why people are finding themselves running into problems so quickly. So there is a whole new demographic of people using gambling, you know, gambling online. Even, you know, females, you know, the feminization of gambling is a study now in Australia, where there used to be, rightly or wrongly, a stigma for women going into the bookies and stuff like that. But now with online, they can gamble, you know, without any stigma, and unfortunately, what happens then is, one of the resources for people that run into problems with gambling, Gamblers Anonymous, there's still a stigma because it's male dominated. So it's, they really haven't, females haven't really got the outlet to go there because of the stigma, even going to a male dominated area of fellowship. So the feminization of gambling. And finally, another demographic is adolescents. I mean, adolescents are being drawn in. The age verification on a lot of these sites, online sites, are at best vague, you know, and they can always be circumvented in any way, like, you know. So there's an awful lot of teenagers now looking for help because of the internet as well. Like, so at least in land-based gambling, more traditional forms, if there's, you know, if a person looks really young, there is a chance that they will be asked for age verification. But on the internet, because it's so anonymous, that's how we're going to run into problems. And I don't think we're ready for it.
Getting into the minds and thoughts of a gambling addict.
The basic thoughts in layman's terms is what we think, we behave that way, and then that becomes our reality. So it's as simple as that if we're looking at layman's terms. So our thought process leads us to behave in a certain way, and if we're behaving in a certain way, that becomes our reality. So you can see how that is in gambling. But the good news is, if we start thinking differently, so if we start opening up and sort of start challenging our irrational thoughts, our behaviour slowly but surely begins to change. And then that becomes our reality also. Cognitively thinking about it the whole time. Jim offered to say, you know, it's a brilliant thing to have in our armoury, to learn how to do something over and over and think about it, be it driving, we can drive. We learn how to drive consciously. But then we eventually can do it unconsciously. We can think about different things, long journeys. We won't even feel ourselves changing the gears. And that's a brilliant plus in evolution. But where it's not a brilliant plus is in addiction, when it comes to addiction, that we don't even think about. We find a bit, you'd often hear people saying in my office and in GA, I just found myself there. You know, I just found myself gambling. I just didn't think about it. I was just gambling away. So what we need to do as counsellors is to elongate that. So in other words, that people don't find themselves there. And that's how cognitions work in the thought process.
How are you going to get somebody to give up gambling if most of it they do in a bookies? Because they go there, number one, nice cup of coffee, other people, human beings. And thirdly, you said the word yourself at some stage, it's a safe haven. It's a little harbour, little haven in there. So they've got, there's quite a few things reinforcing, if you want to call it, the gambling behaviour, habit.
You're right at a certain level, but what you'll find with most problem gamblers, and they'll admit, you know, usually when it comes to the stage where it becomes problematic, and if you haven't been in a bookies, unfortunately, I've spent a lot of time, you don't really, even though you're all there, you're like individuals, you don't really want to be disturbed, and even the chat you're talking about is only about the horses and stuff like that. So it's not really, it's people trying to get, you know, information, people trying to get, you know, what they think, what you think. It's not real social interaction.
It's not a pub.
No, it's not. And the pub can sometimes be the same as well. Do you know what I mean? That falseness, that sort of at a level. People get it when you're talking about real stuff. And my job is to instill, and remember, I just would like to say at this stage that I went through years of problem gambling myself. You know at an intelligence level that all that interaction in the bookies or in the pub at the bar and the jokes, and that's not real social interaction. You know, what we're talking about here is that falseness and stuff like that, and people talk about it when they come into recovery. That's not the real social interaction. But there's no interaction. Everybody is in a trance with the machine. And if you were in the bookies, if you look at anybody, if you are looking at it through a CCTV, you'd look, everybody is in their individual trance. So there might be 20 people in the bookies, but every one of them are in a trance-like state. So that's social. I get what you're saying, Jer, but that social is sort of a myth. That's a sense of falseness. It's not real social interaction.
Some gamblers will say that gambling is not as easy as it looks, that you do require a certain skill. And for example, in the case of horses, not just skill, but a vast fount of knowledge, a vast store of knowledge, which allows you to pick the winner.
Bobby Tway punters, hundreds of on-the-nose backers, well, it just wasn't their day. If only they'd known. Out of the shambles, one horse appeared, complete with rider, Foinaven. But at the 23rd, it was chaos. Horses were going in all directions. Some of them back the way they'd just come.
You may have knowledge, you may have, but remember, we're dealing with animals, we're dealing with, you know, just because you're skillful or knowledgeable and you can name off, problem gamblers take great kudos in the fact that they can remember the last 25 Derby winners. Look, you're in the office, you're in GA, your relationship may be broke, you've lost your property. It's time for us to actually start being real.
Gammonon is a group of people who come together to support each other because they are concerned persons or loved ones or spouses, etc., of compulsive gamblers, the latter who are either still gambling or are in recovery. Some of the key questions Gammonon members must answer are, do you lose time from work due to gambling? Is gambling making your home life unhappy? Have you ever considered self-destruction as a result of your gambling? To explain the work of Gammonon, I now talk to Teresa.
Gammonon is a 12-step programme. It's mainly run by its members itself. We have no counsellors or any trained staff in it. We all just go by our own experiences. One of its main purposes is to help us ourselves to cope with the effects of gambling. It's available to anybody who wants to go, whether you're a partner or member who's a gambler, is in GA or in recovery or not. Needless to say, it's a lot easier to get support and help if they are, but one way or the other, gambling is there for you. One of the main things that it will do, it will give you a little bit of understanding what gambling, compulsive gambling is, and how it affects the gambler, and also how it affects family members or friends.
If person A gambles, how many people could that affect?
They say at least 10. In the nature of gambling, because it's so secretive, it would affect a lot more maybe than alcohol, because people can see somebody who drinks or see somebody on drugs. You cannot see somebody who gambles.
What is a typical get-together like?
Most of the people who come to our meetings are struggling with the effects of gambling in their lives. We have parents, we have wives, partners, children, and on the odd occasion we may have an employer who is there to support the person who has the problem. Anybody is welcome once you've been touched by gambling somewhere in your life. Typically what we do is we have a set that we, you know, we do a little readings from a book, so it has to be structured, otherwise it could end up just being a gossiping session as such. So it's structured in that respect, right? And it is all worked on a first name basis, so your anonymity is very much private there. What you say in those rooms, stay in those rooms. It doesn't go outside those rooms. What we do is we share our experiences, and what worked for us may work for you. We're not judgmental of the compulsive gambler. That's not what we're there for. We're there to help and support the people who have been affected by gambling. That's what it's about.
You're not an expert, but is there anything either genetic or a little bit of how somebody was brought up that might explain addictive behaviour from your experience?
What I would feel is, you know, there's very few families in Ireland that don't have drink somewhere. So why not gambling? You know, whether you're married into it or was a grandparent, and then years ago they weren't called alcoholics, just he was fond of a pint or fond of his drink. So gambling would be pretty much the same. I'm not too sure. I think we talk about, you know, breaking the chain of gambling or addiction within a family, right? And that means all addictions thrive on secrecy and lies, especially gambling, because it's lies all across the board from the very start. So it's to break the chain of that as such. But I'm not too sure. Like, I know in my case, like my husband's parents and all went to race meetings, and he went with them as family and picnics, but he's the only one that's addicted to gambling. He would look at it, and I'm going by the way he explains it. For him, as a teenager growing up, this was something he did, and it meant more to him maybe than the pals. And it just grew from there. It fills a need within people. It's a crutch within a life, the same as all the other addictions. And the truth is, we cannot fix them unless they want to be fixed. But you still think that's some other son there that's there. So it does change your view on certain things that before gambling, I would not have thought of before the gambling. And I never would have spoke like this before either, right? So you do find your own voice, and you also find your own self.
And finally, I go back to John, who talks about what it's like to be broke and hungry. Would you go hungry for gambling?
Yeah, and have done on several occasions, and have gone without bills paid and in the freezing cold in the depths of winter, without any heating in the house because, you know, the money's needed for gambling. But here's one of the insidious things about it. An awful lot of the arcades that are out there in various betting shops will now give you a breakfast, or they'll give you breakfast rolls, or they'll buy food for you to keep you in there, to keep you gambling, to make sure that you don't stop. Because whatever about your view of money is, their view of money is, we don't care where you get it from, we want it, and we'll take every last penny. I have never once been in a bookies or an arcade where they've said to somebody, I think you've won enough now, you should probably go home. I've seen people fall off chairs with hunger. I've seen people being so exhausted that they go to the toilet and they go in there for a few hours sleep. And they're told, go in and sleep and come back out. As long as they've got money, they will gamble. And it will kill people. People have committed suicide. People have neglected their health to the point where the after effects, even if they've got clean through GA, the after effects have killed them. So it's lethal.
April, come she will. When streams are ripe and swell with rain, may she will stay.
This programme about gambling, which is called From Flutter to Gutter, was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee. Sound supervision was by Heather MacLeod. I wish to thank all the contributors. This is Jerry Cunahan, 103.2 Dublin City FM.